This is CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. Bright and early on a Thursday morning. 7 minutes after six. All right, so I got good news and bad news. Good news is the burning platform is coming up, which is always everybody's favorite thing about a Thursday, where you get to hear other people's opinions and you can take them, in lawyers' terms, footstoots and pretend they're yours.
Oh.
Like if you buy a car footstoots, it means that you bought it with whatever's wrong with it and right with it. You bought the thing. And then you take it home. And if you discovered that the brake pedal's a little loose, well, that's tough. You decided you're going to buy footstoots.
Oh.
That's what you're buying with the burning platform. But it's not just some uneducated, stupid opinion. It's Kanth and Pillay's analysis. We try to throw in some other experts from time to time. We talk to some of the journalists involved in some of the stories. And, you know, by the end of it, you might know something you didn't know before.
Well, I already know footstoots.
There we go.
I'll use that with Pinky later today.
Careful now. Hey. Don't you go talking to people like that. And the bad news is, unfortunately, Pumi is not going to be with us in the studio this morning because she has a son and she has work to do, you know. She's got this primary responsibility, which Sia and I don't have, of a child. Kanejo-sized problem, as she called it in a message.
Yeah, I looked at that and I went, oh. Whoopsie. Yeah.
So we'll check
can't
in.
Relate.
We'll check in with Pums in a little while and find out where she is. And I had a whole discussion based on our discussion from last week that I wanted to have with her, but we'll save that for when she's in the studio too. Because among others, Lubabalo sent me a message on Twitter. And I mean, this is what I love about what we do here, right? If you disagree with me and you think that I need to be put in my place, you can. I mean, that's not going to happen in other media platforms. And a lot of people make a lot more sense than me some of the time, and I'm happy to take criticism. In fact, I think it's very, very healthy. So when I get an email or a tweet or whatever it is, and I don't really look at Twitter that much, but it's a good place to get this kind of feedback. And Lubabalo said basically that, you know, he's used to listening to this show and we take everyone's opinion and we listen to each other and we reason our way through an argument. And he says, I wasn't reasonable when I was talking to Pumi the other day. So I thought, you know what, let me revisit that discussion. And maybe I can learn a little more and we can figure out whether or not I was paying adequate attention. And I don't want anyone to get the wrong idea. Pumi and I have known each other for, must be going on almost 20 years.
Yeah, I was actually going to say.
And I always find it's a huge relief to me when I'm able to argue with someone without them taking it personally, and she did not take any of it personally. In fact, we were chatting to each other the whole of Thursday last week as well, so you don't ever need to worry about that. From that point of view, you know, we're both adults and we like to disagree. In fact, it's a compliment to the other person when you allow yourself to disagree with them, because it means you're not just doing all the things that people do when they pretend that they like each other. You know, these platitudes that people throw at each other. Oh, yes, but you know, let's agree to disagree. That kind of shit. It's just, that's disrespectful to me. It's deceitful. It's not honest. And it's doing whatever you have to do to keep the peace, which I think is a weakness. I don't think it's a strength. Sneeze for Thursday. And you know the show's live. Anyway, so that's one thing we wanted to get done this morning, but we'll have to save that for next week, Thursday. We will check in with Pumi and just find out how her morning's going, and she wants to say hi anyway, and then we'll look at the five things you need to know. We've got Anthea popping in this morning with a look at Tito Mboweni's budget from yesterday. And if you've got some thoughts on that, you can let us know. I didn't watch the budget. I went to see the Ruth Bader Ginsburg movie, which I got wrong. I was meant to go on Tuesday night, and it ended up being Wednesday night. I just put it in the diary in the wrong day. And if that's ever happened to you, you know what I'm talking about. You know, when you think, oh, I've got this under control. Okay, cool. Put it in the diary for Tuesday, ends up being Wednesday. But we'll talk about the Ruth Bader Ginsburg movie. It's called On the Basis of Sex in just a minute. Hey, Pumelele. Hello. Good morning.
Hello.
How you doing?
Oh, guys.
What's the trial and tribulation of Pumi this morning? What's Kanekho done to you?
It's not Kanekho, but you know the problem with children, eh? Is you make every plan, and then everything changes.
Yeah.
It teaches you humility. So that's where I am this morning. And I would let him say hi, but he's brushing his teeth, so he can't say hi. Go finish up quickly, man. Oh.
So what do you have to do this morning? Take him off to school?
I have to take him to school. And I did actually last night at about 11. Consider am I a bad parent if I bring him to the studio?
Yeah. And then drop him off late. No, that would have been a bad thing.
At 6 in the morning.
No, shame.
And then drop him off afterwards. Mm. But I thought that's being a bad parent.
Yeah.
And I feel particularly strong about being a bad parent after watching a show the other day about parents that I think are really, really bad parents. I don't know if you've seen it. Have you seen that Abducted in Plain Sight?
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
Why are you watching things like that?
You know, that should be... Your parents shouldn't be allowed to watch that stuff. It's going to make you paranoid.
People should be allowed to watch that stuff. Here's Kanekho. He's going to say good morning quickly.
Hey,
good
Kanekho.
Morning, Gareth.
Hey, morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Well. Kanekho, are you off to school this morning?
Yes.
Who are your best friends? Who are your best friends at school?
My friend Jess.
Okay. And
my friend Jess, Gavi.
Uh-huh.
James, Raymond, I've tons of friends.
Oh, wow, there's a lot of them. You've got a long list of friends. Are you quite popular there,
Kanekho?
I
have two full classes of friends.
Wow. Kanekho, is there anyone at school that we need to be aware of? Are there any teachers that you're not 100% sure about? You don't love those teachers. Okay, well, that's good news. That's very good news.
You don't have those teachers.
And have you got sport
you
today?
I don't do sports at school.
Okay.
But I do after school soccer.
Oh, nice.
I mean, not after school soccer, during school soccer.
Oh, well, that's okay. That sounds like a good use of time during school.
He's
I like it.
Booked and busy.
All right. Okay. Well, listen, your mom was stressing. Tell her not to worry and get to school safely this morning and enjoy your day. All right.
Okay.
Okay, Kanekho.
Thanks, guys. I'll see you next week.
Hey? Awesome. Right, chat to you later.
I'm so hacked. I'm not going to be there to talk about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and I'm not going to be there to talk about, like, with Samson. I'm so hacked.
I'll tell you something. You'll love the movie, so go and see it if you can this week, and we could talk about it next week.
Okay, cool.
All right, Pums.
Have a good day, guys.
Cool. Awesome. Bye-bye.
There we go. There's Pumi Mashiko. Couldn't be here this morning, but she's so responsible. She's able to take the kid to school and also check in with us.
I feel like the common theme of the trials and tribulations of Pumi is becoming a thing now.
Yeah, but she really is. Quite,
I love it.
Like she's one of those people who manages, like a lot of single moms in South Africa, really, who are doing backbreaking work, not only to make sure that they fulfill all those responsibilities, but they're also running businesses. I mean, that's, you know, Pumi's real job is she runs her own business, for heaven's sake.
And, you know, there's no need to toot her horn. I just feel like I'm being very honest here. What's remarkable about her, and I wish many more people had this, is an attitude of, okay, I'm making it happen.
Sure.
You know, a lot of people are now like, I'm overwhelmed.
She never feels sorry for herself. But you know what? Yeah. That's thank God there are people like her, because I can't listen to any more complaining.
Right.
Aren't you sick of it too?
A woe unto me mentality will just never accomplish anything.
The worst.
You know, we all have our own level of tough times, but you just got to get up and make it happen.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So how was the movie last night?
The movie was fantastic. I actually really liked it.
On
the basis of sex. It was not a waste of time. And I put a post on Instagram of the movie poster and I said, look, either this is going to be some feminist claptrap that's going to just annoy me, or it's going to be a really inspiring and interesting story. And it was definitely the latter. Look, I don't know. You know, if it comes out on Netflix, it might be worth waiting for that.
Okay.
Because it's not the kind of movie you need to see in the cinema.
How long was it?
It's not like an action thriller with loads of special effects. You know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg riding a surfboard. Right?
And you need to watch it in 3D and feel that.
No. So, you know, she's... we see her now as this little old lady on the Supreme Court in America. And it's a fascinating story because... she really was, in so many ways, a groundbreaker and trailblazer. And we've got to remember, and that's what this movie puts into in incredible contrast, is the kind of world that she inhabited in the 1950s and 60s when she was a Harvard law student and one of only about five girls in the law school. She was certainly the first generation of women who'd been allowed to study at Harvard, full stop. You know, we think about that. That's only 70 years ago, 60,
yeah,
70 years ago.
It's not that long.
It's really not. And women were in, I think it was 140 different jobs in America. It could even have been more. They were just not allowed to do the same thing as men were doing. And obviously there are some areas where that makes a little bit more sense than others. You know, the front line in combat. But if a woman wanted to fly a plane, I mean, we have female pilots. I get into a plane now and I hear that the pilot's a female pilot. I don't think twice.
Mm.
It doesn't change a damn thing. And in those days, it was a serious problem. Like, you had men going, I'm sorry, this is unacceptable. There is no way for you to do this. And that was in the first world country that is America, where you would have progressive thought, and you had people changing the world and civil rights. And, you know, by the time a lot of the issues of slavery had been put to bed, really, and obviously the civil rights movement started in respect of making black people equal to white people in the law, which is the very least of what we should aspire to in any free, open country, that race and gender should not be a reason for discrimination in the law. You know, that everybody should be treated equally by the courts, by the government, by the financial institutions, those kinds of things. Those are absolutely things that we take for granted now. And when she started off, she didn't have any of that. And apart from all of this, I like the fact that Ruth Bader Ginsburg has always been a very smart jurist. She's a very capable judge. She understood the law. She taught as a professor because she couldn't get a job at any law firm. She tried to do that straight up.
How?
And
crazy.
12, 13 of them said to her no.
That's what I find remarkable in stories like this and people who've really succeeded beyond a lot of hurdles is the resilience. And yes, laws may change, but the culture might not change as fast enough. So you think about even once she finally got that job and she was one of the few and she'd still have to take coffee breaks and she'd probably have to sit in the coffee room and no one really wants to talk to her and she has to keep on going
every single day.
I don't know if I would have the strength of character, really not over-exaggerating, if I would have the strength of character to be that resilient.
Look, there was a little bit of poetic license taken in the movie, but my favorite part of it is right at the end where they show the real Ruth Bader Ginsburg walking up the steps of the Supreme Court. And I think, that's some powerful stuff. She was the second woman on the Supreme Court. I think the first Jewish woman on the Supreme Court. I think there was a Jewish man before as a justice of the Supreme Court, associate justice, as they call them. But really, she made her mark, and her life, which obviously she's now in her 80s, she's the oldest woman on the Supreme Court, she's the oldest person on the Supreme Court. Her 80s and not the greatest health in the world are starting to take their toll, and people are saying, well, she could be the next one to drop dead, and then Trump gets to appoint another justice, and then the court's going to swing to the right, and you know, this is the biggest concern for the Democrats at the moment. They call her the notorious RBG, the notorious Ruth Bader Ginsburg, because she would deliver some of her judgments, and when she was a lawyer, she would deliver some of her arguments in a really sort of powerful way. You'll see it in the movie too, if you do.
Much like our finance minister starting off his speech with a tale of two cities, is it? It was the best of times.
Oh yeah,
it was the worst of times.
I never know what. Let's get. Never know what anyone means when they quote Dickens.
It is just odd.
I don't even think that's such a great book, frankly.
No.
I didn't enjoy Oliver Twist. I don't like anything that Dickens wrote. I don't like that whole Industrial Revolution, Victorian England, workhouse, children going around begging for food. And I don't like any of that.
That's call him the Notorious TM. I know. Yeah. Doesn't have the same ring as Notorious RBG, though.
Anyway, so we'll talk a little bit about the budget with Anthea later on.
Yeah, she's 85 years old. And she is
85?
No.
Oh, sure, she looks great.
Yeah, that's what we mean when we say she works hard for her money. Sure. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is 85 years old, and she's still going, I was going to say strong, but she just had cancer surgery in December. Mm.
Yeah, her husband died in 2010. He was diagnosed with testicular cancer back in the 1950s.
Oh, man.
And he was given a 5% chance of surviving, and he made it. And they had a very happy marriage. You know, what's so interesting is there's a behind-the-scenes story. And in this movie, they might be taking some license, I don't know. But certainly it appears that she and her husband, Martin Ginsburg, that they had a very happy marriage. They had two kids who ended up being very successful in their own right. I think their daughter lectures at Columbia Law School. He was a lawyer. She was obviously a lawyer. And their son
Martin was a lawyer. Oh.
Yeah, he was a lawyer too. Tax attorney. Very good tax attorney in America. So, you know, they supported each other when he was sick. She went to his classes and as well as hers. And I don't want to give the whole story away. Go and watch the movie. It's very good.
It's so funny. I just Googled Martin Ginsburg. And you know how a person's name will pop up and then there's a subheading of what their designation is or why they're famous. Yeah. All it says is Ruth Bader Ginsburg's husband.
Right.
That's his claim to fame.
So that in itself is an interesting thing because it shows you that there's some kind of parity now. Mm. And of course, you know, hardcore feminists will tell you, well, the fight goes on and there's a glass ceiling and all this stuff. And they may have a point in some places and they may not in others. But really, if you, and this is something we all have to be able to do at some point, is to take stock of how far we've come as humanity. And how little opportunity there was for any of us, male, female, white, black, girl, boy, hetero, homosexual, transgender, whatever it might be that you consider to be the thing that makes you other.
Hetero naledi, homo naledi. That's
correct.
One too. Yeah.
I mean, you know, those were the days when homo naledi was just all there was. We think about how far we've come, and I do appreciate, and I hope that more people appreciate this, history for this purpose. This is why we're doing these podcast series now that I can get off my chest these stories from history about great men and women who have done things that have brought us to this point, whether they were good or bad. And we're going to be looking at good people, and we're going to be looking at awful, evil people in history. But it's all part of the story of humanity.
Mm.
And if we don't have the ability to appreciate where we've come from and how far we've come, then you just seem ungrateful. You know, as a species.
But like, it also allows us to have better perspective.
Yeah, there was no way back 30, 40 years ago for women to have been in the management structure of a company. And if they were on the board of directors, do you know how hard they had to work to get there? And take it back 100 years, there was very little option or opportunity for ordinary people, men, women, or anyone else, to start a business, to build a brand for themselves on social media, to communicate with just about anyone in the world by email. Now, these are things that we take for granted. And we're like, oh, the world is so unfair and it's so bad and it's going to hell in a handbasket. It isn't. You are alive at the best time. I always say this.
Mm.
And you're born at a time where, I mean, who's going to bat an eyelid if a woman comes to you and says, hey, listen, I'm a drone pilot and I'd like to, you know, map out your lands on your farm for you. You're not going to go, oh, I don't know if you could do that. You're a woman.
Mm.
You're going to go, sure, let me see your work.
It's interesting because yesterday I found myself in this just phase of Googling and finding out more about Gloria Vanderbilt.
Oh, yeah?
And she's, amongst other things, CNN's Anderson Cooper's mother.
Yes, that's right.
She was born in the 20s because she just turned 95 yesterday, actually.
She was the daughter of she was actually the granddaughter of the John Vanderbilt, the guy who made all the money.
Aristocrat, but proper.
All of the money.
And to grow up in all of that money
and
to find, you know, like she experienced through and through the 30s and the depression and moving through that and growing up and, you know,
she didn't feel the depression most people.
Yeah, she did.
She didn't really.
Look, things were great for her.
She might have looked out of the window occasionally and said to her servant, oh, Magdalene, look at those people. They're so poor. Throw them some of our leftover chicken from last night's soiree. Yeah, that's the kind of thing she would have said.
That's why I didn't want to exactly compare cases, but I just find it interesting how we all have these different perspectives. And really, if you just don't look back at where we all come from, you can't truly take stock of where we are now. You know, back then was such a big whoop that she was trying to design her own jeans, and how dare she, and who does she think she is? And, you know, she has this successful jean line that she started way back
Gloria
when.
Vanderbilt?
Gloria Vanderbilt
really?
Jeans. Oh, yeah.
Huh.
And she started in the art world as well, and people didn't exactly take her seriously. But now, still at 95, she's alive. She has her own art studio. She paints every single day. It was actually incredible
and
to find out
Anderson
more about
Anderson Cooper
her.
For a son.
Yeah, there's actually an awesome documentary that they did together. It's called Nothing Left Unsaid. And that's what I was also watching a bit. It's conversations between she and Anderson to discuss her entire life, to say that regardless of what would happen in future, because we all don't know when we die, there's nothing left unsaid between us. It's quite sweet.
Yeah, that is nice.
Mm.
Well, you look into anybody's story and you pay enough attention to it and it turns out to be interesting, and you turn out to, you know, you have some feelings about those people. I mean, if you go into a close observation of a serial killer,
well,
no, even if you look at them. I mean, my sister watches these shows. I don't like watching people who have murderous intent. I don't like to see it. You go into their lives and you see how they grew up and you see what it was that triggered them, or whether there was some kind of inbuilt psychopathy in them. What, I don't know what it was, but it always is fascinating to look at these people and to find out what it is that made them into who they are. And you develop a little bit of, you know, simpatico. You get a little bit of understanding out of the story.
Yeah.
Which you wouldn't get if you don't pay close attention. We all tend to look at people and judge them and go, okay, well, that's a good person or that's a bad person. And then we write them off if they're bad, and we try to get to know them if they're good. But that's very superficial.
Well, it's interesting.
I'm not saying go out and make friends with
serial
killers.
Gareth said.
That would be bad advice. I just want to, let me table that right now. I'm not saying go out and make friends with serial killers.
Well, it's pertinent that you bring it up this week, because South Africans on social media are still trying to wrap their heads around this, because DJ Cleo, the musical DJ, went to visit his friend and someone who he considers a brother, Brix, the Guaido artist.
Oh, yes. Brix is in jail because Brix allegedly...
No, we can...
Has he been sentenced?
Yeah, sentenced, okay, and he's in jail. Now we can drop the allegedly. He's
okay, so Brix,
a convicted rapist.
Yeah, and... he's in jail for that, and then obviously, you know, you can't go and visit a rapist,
take photos, and then you tweet something along the lines of, we all fall down sometimes.
Yeah, because South Africans are not very forgiving about this. So have they been tearing him apart on social media?
Oh yeah.
You know, how about, like, if Sia did something terrible? I've thought about this before. Let's say Sia did it, or my brother did it, or someone I've been friends with for a very long time did it. That doesn't mean you suddenly stop being their friend. They didn't do this to you. And even though they might have a really evil moment of... I mean, I've thought about this with the Oscar Pistorius situation. How would I feel if my brother or Sia or someone else ended up in a situation where they'd killed someone?
Mm.
Would I be able to still be their friend? Would I want to go and visit them in prison? And I think that's up to everybody's individual call. I mean, there's no, who am I to tell you, oh no, if someone does one thing in their life that's terrible, maybe it's a pattern, but I don't know that you must stop immediately being friends with them, write them off as a human being. And obviously their levels are terrible. You know, if you get caught stealing from the cash register and you compare that, or let's say you lie on your tax forms, and you compare that to murder, that's slightly different.
Mm.
I'm probably going to be very nervous around someone, even if I've known them for years, and they get convicted of murder. I'm not going to be at ease like I might have been before.
Yeah, and it's one thing if you drove over someone, and it's another if you hunted them down for 2 weeks.
Oh my God.
I'm just putting it out there.
Yeah. So I'm not going to say I would or wouldn't until I know for sure.
Hey, yeah, you never know up until you're in that situation.
So leave the guy alone. If he wanted to go and visit his friend, and he thinks it's just a stumble that we all fall occasionally,
because we all just fall into being a rapist, like we fall in love.
Then let him say that. You know what? Take him on as well. Doesn't mean that you are wrong to attack him for that. Maybe it is wrong. Who knows? I'm not going to judge. I'm not close enough to the situation. And frankly, I don't know either of the people in it. I think I met Bricks once or twice.
Yeah, I've met both of them.
Oy, oy, oy.
And I actually met Bricks for the first time after he initially appeared in court.
Oh.
So it was like recently, a couple of months ago. And I was like, and I just went to the corner of the room.
You know, Mandy Wiener wrote that book about all those gangsters, right?
Yes.
I read that book and it spoiled going out in Joburg for me. I couldn't do it after that because I would see these people that were characters in her book, you know, be on a night out with your friends, and it would make me so uncomfortable I'd have to leave. So maybe I'm a hypocrite because I don't know that I can treat people the same when they've done something like that. I think maybe I would also write them off. That's what I'm tending to think. But if it actually happened, I don't know. I don't know how I'd react.
I don't deem it much of a bad trait. I'm sorry.
I don't know.
It's just a personal thing.
Yeah. Who the hell knows? Five things you need to know today. Are you ready?
Let's get into it. Ah, good, look at us.
Jesus.
Just spend too Next much thing time
our,
together.
Our periods will sync up. All right. First of all, police are on standby in Diepsloot with protests along the N14 highway set to resume. Now, you know that N14, there's that little bridge over it just before you get to the sewerage farm. Well, there was a blockade there yesterday because the residents of Diepsloot are protesting over electricity. Joburg Metro officials say they received information that residents had planned to disrupt the afternoon peak time traffic. Now, that highway is just awful most of the time. It's really busy. It's the main artery between Krugersdorp at the one end, and I suppose it ends in like Centurion. And it connects up to the N1, and it connects up to that main road that goes from Krugersdorp into Johannesburg. So it's an important artery.
Mm.
The situation is calm in the area, traffic flowing smoothly on the N14, but Metro Police are still on standby in anticipation of a second round of protests. Diepsloot residents had closed off parts of the N14 with burning tires and rocks. They say they received information that angry residents would return to block the road if power is not restored. So the people of Diepsloot just want power for free. Don't tell me that they're paying for that electricity. They're not. There is absolutely no way that they're paying for that electricity. If there is maybe one or two of the people who live in Diepsloot, and believe me, living in Diepsloot's no fun. It's not the kind of place you want to live. People are not living there because they've chosen to live in Diepsloot, and it's a marvelous, luxurious golf estate. Diepsloot's got to be one of the most terrible places to live in all of Gauteng. That is besides the point, though. If you don't pay for something, you don't get something. And it links to a story that I saw in the news about Durban University of Technology students. I think it's DUT. Let me just look that up and make absolutely sure. I don't want to give you false information. But UKZN, sorry, not DUT. UKZN okay. students throwing mattresses out of windows at a residence because they don't think the mattresses are good enough. And they set them on fire as they throw them out of the window, and they fly out of the window onto the ground below.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see actual pictures of the mattresses being thrown out of the windows, fed up with poor conditions of their beds. University of KwaZulu-Natal education students have resorted to setting them on fire. University residents in Hospital Road near Durban South Beach burnt the metal frames of the beds on Sunday night to voice their dissatisfaction. On Monday morning, burning mattresses were being flung out of the windows at the residence occupied by education students from UKZN's Edgewood campus. The protest resulted in lectures at the campus being cancelled. So this is linked to Diepsloot because you've got people here who have got something for nothing. In the case of Diepsloot, power. In the case of UKZN students, accommodation and beds and things that they didn't buy or pay for. We know that for a fact. They get these things for free. When you get something for free, how much value do you place on it?
You say it all the time and it's so true.
Zero. If someone gives you 10 Rand, that's great, but they've given you 10 Rand, you don't really value it. If you've worked for 10 Rand, man, do you understand and appreciate the value of that 10 Rand. I'll say it again, over and over again. There are a lot of people who think that the government is there to be their mommy and their daddy, and it is not. And the taxpayer is not there to foot the bill because you don't like the comfort of your mattress. If you don't like it, do what I have to do. Do what Sia has to do. do what Pinky and what Pumi and what everyone else who's on this show has to do. You go to the shop and you buy a new mattress. And if you can't afford it, then you can't afford it. Then you've got to have the mattress you have and stop complaining, because it's better than lying on the ground. And that's what you would have if you didn't have the state nannying you.
Oof, setting fire to things.
I mean, setting fire to things, blocking roads, making it everyone else in the country's problem. When those other people in the country are the ones who are financing your free mattresses and free electricity. How dare you? And then, this Vicky Momberg, this is another story. Lawyers representing Vicky Momberg have applied to stop representing the convicted racist. So you can't be convicted, let's be clear, you cannot be sent to jail for being a racist, but she was basically assaulting a police officer verbally, and that's considered an affront, an assault. She was found guilty of a crime called crimen injuria, which is a very particular crime which has to do with people attacking your integrity and attacking your personality and destroying your reputation, effectively. So she was convicted of 4 counts of crimen injuria. She's not a convicted racist. That's what the EWN website says. There's no such thing as being convicted of racism, because if we had to do that, you would have to know someone's inside thoughts. And in her case, they're very much outside thoughts.
Well, yeah.
She's a vulgar, foul-mouthed human being who no one should support. But you can't be sent to jail for being a horrible person. An asshole. So she's been sent to jail because she's guilty of crimen injuria, a very obscure and strange crime. You can look it up.
You don't hear a lot of that.
No, you don't. And
well,
it's very rare.
Thankfully.
Very rare that people would go to jail for this. But she's such an objectionable human being. Even her lawyers want nothing to do with her. Momberg told the magistrate's court on Wednesday that she no longer wanted to be represented by him. So she's...
I'm so confused.
She doesn't want to be represented by... him, kingdom, or nah? Is he a black guy?
Yeah, I was actually
so, oh, I love this. This is so great. So he's a black dude. She's a racist. She doesn't want to be represented by him anymore, but he's saying, you know what? I don't want to fucking represent you either. It's just great. It's lovely.
Okay. So, oh, so do we say...
Only in South Africa. You see what happens?
Like, what
racist,
a messed up
racist,
situation.
Racists and their black lawyers are strange bedfellows. Oh, man.
Should we at least commend her on sticking to her morals so much?
No, she's got no
that
morals.
That even in the depths no of morals. Everything... Well, her no, personal morals are that listen, she doesn't like black people.
You know
so.
What? Yeah, Vicky Momberg was given a chance to just say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to behave like that. I don't hate all black people. Because if you do, I mean, I don't know anybody, and I know a lot of people who have dodgy politics and dodgy opinions. I like them. I like having them in my life. They make it colorful and interesting. But I don't know anyone who hates, like, you know, enough to go to jail for hate. She hates enough to go to jail. She was given opportunities to change her mind, to attempt rehab of some kind.
Not
she's
interested.
She's like, nah, pretty much hate blacks.
Girl, what did we ever do to you?
Yes, sis.
Was it Mendoza's Galagata was too much for you?
No, whites like that song.
Yeah, see, it's like, what did we
Pinky,
ever
have
do?
You ever met anyone who's like that stupid? I mean, you studied law, so you can maybe even tell us a little bit about crimen injuria. But this woman's so full of hatred that she was given a chance to recant it, basically, and to try to present to the court a slightly nicer personality. She doesn't have one.
Look, I did my articles at a law clinic. And there were times when a client would come in, yeah. And the moment they see that you're black and you're the one that's going to assist, they're like, we want to speak to your professor or to someone else. And then you tell them, no, but I'm the candidate attorney who's supposed to help you. And they're like, no, I want someone else. Or they come in and they want you to speak Afrikaans.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. And if you can't, it's a big problem.
So is it possible that she ended up with a black lawyer?
Yes, I think so.
What's his name? Kingdom?
Kingdom or nah.
Oh.
I don't know any guy who's like white as the driven snow who's called Kingdom or nah. So that's quite funny. It's almost like justice that she ended up with with a black lawyer. And now he wants nothing to do with her and she wants nothing to do with him.
Huh? I
how
just
bizarre.
Got his details if
oh, really?
You want to talk to
sure, let's talk to Kingdom Honor.
And find out what really happened
yeah,
there.
Sure, why not? All right, by the way, do you talk to those people again or do you just say to them, okay, well then I can't help you?
I just leave them, hey? Because I don't have time for that.
I once actually saw a similar screenshot of a situation that happened like that. Someone who walked in and said, no, you need to be able to speak Afrikaans. Yeah. So the other guy was Sotho and said, well, great, you'll also have to speak Sotho with me. And there were email exchanges of the two, one in Afrikaans and one is the Sotho. I'm like, well, guys.
You know how much work they were both doing behind the scenes translating?
Honestly, like, it's just not worth
this
it.
This one's standing their ground and no, only Afrikaans. This one's standing their ground. No, only Sotho. The two of them trying to correspond with each other. Must have been hell. God, people.
So
you know,
silly.
When you decide that you're going to be on principle difficult, you deserve whatever follows. Okay, so Jason Roeder, you know who he is.
Ooh.
They're calling him wife killer, Jason Roeder.
Ah, well. Oh. If they listened to us a couple of months ago.
He will be sentenced in a week's time following the completion of closing arguments on Wednesday. Ben thinks he's guilty as hell. Mm. Ben decides these things like that. Ben's not really all that much into the evidence. When he thinks he knows what's going on, he's in. And you know what? He's been right so far.
Yeah.
Ben is reading that Henry Van Breda book, and he's loving it. He sends us regular updates. Anyway, last year, Jason Roeder was convicted of killing Susan Roeder at the Speer Wine Estate in 2016, trying to stage her suicide. Now they're trying to decide on what his punishment should be. So he is a killer. That's besides the point now. The defense argues there's no basis for a harsher punishment, but the state has called on the court to impose a punishment exceeding the minimum prescribed service of 15 years. So if you go to jail for murder, is that usually 15 years? Pinky?
I honestly don't know.
No, I'm not. See, the minute you give me an in-house lawyer, I refer to her.
We throw everything at her now.
Anyway, the judge said that Susan didn't die instantly and suffered a painful and gruesome death, and he must be punished accordingly. I saw his mother take to the stand, Jason Roeder's mother, in mitigation of sentence to say what a nice boy he was growing up.
Oh, Mom.
See? The things that mothers have to do. I mean, I felt sorry for her. I was like, you know, even if she really thinks that about her son, it's got to be hard. It's got to be hard to see him sitting there and, you know, this is my boy, the wife killer.
Yeah, that's the name of his documentary. I can put money on it. There's something being made now. The wife killer.
Here's an awful story, just as awful as the Susan Roeder story. For some people, it might even be more awful. I don't know how you rank these things, but a 9-year-old boy was raped at a school. Curragh Holdings School has been rocked by controversy following the rape of a learner within its premises. In yet another case of sexual attack in schools, police in the Northwest confirmed they were investigating the rape of a 9-year-old schoolboy at the Curragh Academy in Mahikeng last week. According to the Mahikeng police, the boy was standing outside the toilets at an elite school last Wednesday. By the way, it's not an elite school just because it's private. Mm-hmm. It's really not an elite school. I've seen there are Curragh schools all over the place. They are not elite schools. Elite schools like Hilton or Michael House or those places that cost you hundreds of thousands of rand. They're not elite. These parents have saved up. They work hard to send their kids to a school where they'll get better than an Angie Mocheha level of education. That's not elite. I hate the way that the press call a luxury car anything with a gearbox.
Oh.
Really, they do. Whenever they report some story on someone who looks like they might have a little bit of money there, the luxury vehicle, you find out it's a Toyota Corolla.
Let's blame estate agents. They're the ones who started a whole spin on
Sia
making
lives
things
in
look.
His luxury apartment. In Johannesburg, South Africa. You know, like you find out Sia's just in a normal 2-bedroom apartment, you know?
Like amazing sea views. If you just squint and use binoculars, you'll be able to see a hint
I think
of
it
the
is.
Sea.
You're right. It's a state agent. Anyway, Curragh School, let's not get distracted from the story. It's awful. The child's family are too traumatized to comment. The mother said they would be given time to deal with the tragedy, or would like to be given time. Curragh Holdings confirmed the matter but declined to comment on what actions they were taking to ensure the safety of learners. You see, I want to know what kind of predator is hanging around the toilets and taking advantage of a 9-year-old boy. And let's not forget, last week a teacher at a Valhalla primary school in Centurion was arrested and appeared in court for allegedly sexually assaulting 24 learners.
Oof.
The 55-year-old teacher had allegedly touched pupils inappropriately from June last year. So, if he's 55 and he's been at school for that long teaching, it's probably a lot more kids that just kind of brushed it off.
Nasty.
Ay, ay, ay. The alleged abuse was reported by learners after a safety presentation at the school. Earlier this month, the Western Cape Education Department revealed that four primary school learners had been raped, allegedly by four of their schoolmates. So it's not just the teachers you have to be afraid of, but also the other learners. The department said the four learners were sodomized by three learners in grade 7 and one in grade 6. These are very young kids for this to be happening. It's disturbing in every way.
Hugely disturbing.
What's going on? Oh, I'm glad I don't have kids when I read these stories, and I feel so sorry for people who do.
Yeah, I really am not taking the piss out of the situation, but it's like I would worry so much as a parent about now who are your kids with.
Oh my God.
They aren't even safe at school. How you manage to just keep your sanity as a parent these days, I don't know.
And the final thing you need to know this morning is Karl Lagerfeld is to be cremated without ceremony. He's like, just put in the box. Just burn me, put in box. He will be cremated without ceremony. His ashes are likely to be scattered with those of his mother and his lover, the designer's label said on Wednesday. His wishes will be respected.
Mm.
A spokesperson for the... I wonder what he'll be burnt in. Something very fashionable.
Just a black suit, I think.
Have you ever thought about what you'd like to be buried in or burnt in? I mean, that's a funny discussion to have with people.
Well, I've never thought of that because I do want to just be burnt. So clothes aren't really important at that point.
Are you going naked? Wouldn't you like to be burnt up in your favorite suit? Have those fabrics mixed up with your ashes? I mean, just think about it. It's very macabre, but it's worth thinking about. So he died at the age of 85. We spoke about him. They called him the Kaiser. He was known for his rapier wit. Had long insisted that he would rather die than be buried.
Sorry?
Yeah.
I'd rather die.
I've been asked to be cremated and for my ashes to be dispersed with those of my mother and those of Choupette, his cat, if she dies before me. Choupette. Is Choupette still alive? Anyway, let's listen to some more. He had previously said his ashes would be mixed with those of his longtime lover, the French dandy Jacques de Baché. Dandy? Who died of AIDS in 1989. A dandy is a word for someone who is extremely fashionable. It started... Yeah, you're a bit of a dandy, actually.
Why did I only discover this word?
Look it up. It started with a guy called Beau Brummel in the 1830s. 1820s, 1830s. Beau Brummel was this extremely well-dressed, sartorially excellent specimen.
Ooh, wow. Dandy. A man unduly concerned with looking stylish and fashionable.
There, that's you, Sia. Unduly concerned. So this guy was his lover for a long time. He told Debache's biographer that he had kept half of his ashes so they could be together at the end. The German-born Chanel Supremo had put them away somewhere secret. One day they will be added to mine, he told the biographer. He fell for the dashing Debache when he was 19 and looked after him until his death at 38. This was despite Debache, a notoriously philandering party animal, having an affair with Lagerfeld's great friend, Yves Saint Laurent.
Oh
my God.
Shock, horror, gasp.
These are the stories that come out when you're dead. The other half of the ashes were given to his family, but Lagerfeld kept half for himself. He said, burial is horrible. I wanted to disappear like the animals in the verge. I don't know how he's become French. I started him off as German.
Yeah.
It's awful to encumber people with your remains, he told French television. Nor did he want to be mourned at a big funeral, like the one given to his rock legend friend, Johnny Hallyday, in 2017. What a horror, Lagerfeld declared. With all the infighting in the family, the funeral felt like a farce. Speculation was also mounting about who would inherit the designer's fortune, an estimated $200 million.
So the rumors are that Choupette is named in the will. Choupette the cat.
Yeah. He intended to leave his money to Choupette, his beloved Burman cat. Don't worry, there's enough for everyone, he said, and admitted throwing money out of the window as soon as he earned it on art, 18th century furniture, and gifts to friends. That's what he would spend his money on.
Maybe as ridiculous as it sounds, maybe the money and in his will, he defined that actually there should be minders for the cat and money will go to cat food. And
I wonder what this means for Chanel. Like, they have to find a new designer now. Do you think it's going to affect the price of all of their stuff?
Well, these things happen a lot. Like, you think of, there's the fashion label Alexander McQueen. It isn't run by Alexander McQueen because he's dead.
He's dead.
So he was just a creative director of Chanel, even though he's been associated for years with Chanel. as much as, I don't know, what's a comparison most people could get? Vogue and Anna Wintour. She's just the editor, so
yeah,
there'll just be someone new if she were to.
There's one other thing I want to throw in, because we'll get to Said by Sia, but we don't have sport today. So a very funny thing happened on Twitter yesterday. And like I said, I don't often go on Twitter, but this was worth it. Derek Harnikom and Herman Mashaba had a big fight.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Derek Harnikom said, "Herman, it would be good if you could just focus a bit more on your responsibilities and your mandate. The city is a mess under your leadership. I'm happy to work with you to help sort it out." Derek Harnikom. So Herman Mashaba replies, "Derek, if you didn't focus on protecting former President Jacob Zuma, Nkandla, and the looting of state resources by the Guptas, we would have a better country today. I really do wonder how you sleep after destroying our country like that." And it spectacularly backfired on Derek Harnikom. People have been laying into him, saying, "Yeah, you know what? Don't criticize Herman Mashaba. He's created jobs. He's trying to sort out Joburg. He has he's gone after the money that was looted from the city's coffers. And you're in no position, Derek Harnikom, to be throwing and casting aspersions the way of Herman Mashaba." So be very careful on social media who you fight with, because you could end up with the public on your side or against you for all the right or the wrong reasons. It's totally unpredictable.
As well, who do you... You cannot tell me he was not mindful of the fact that he's about to point fingers at someone.
No, but you meanwhile, see, people don't think that way. I mean, you look at how many people attack each other on social media. "Oh, you're a douchebag, and I've seen you saying this and doing that." And then they suddenly get a reply where they're like, "Oh, yeah, but you slept with my sister." Everybody goes, "Oh," and then it gets all ugly.
But it's the whole log in my eye,
oh, yes,
splint in your eye complex.
People never see that stuff. They don't get it. They don't get it. They don't
just
get it
another
all.
Day.
Ew, cunty.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Oh. All right, Said by Sia time. What have we got this morning? Here is Sia with Said by Sia.
Gareth, I have this just for you, because this is a story that almost seems like it's coming from the year 3019.
Yay.
There are smart pills that are filled with tiny needles,
yes,
that could inject medicine directly into your stomach. So if you're one of those people who hates needles, well, good news for you. Think of the likes of vaccinations. Oh, the V word. And
but God isn't what around, happens to that afterwards, because you... It's still inside you in those little needles.
Yeah, it's a lot to think about. So if you, you know, vaccinations, if you have diabetes and you have to take insulin, if you have to be on some sort of IV drip, that could all just one day be replaced by these smart pills that inject medicine directly into your body. So what's new about this? Well, many pharmaceutical compounds simply just aren't suited to be taken through the mouth orally, because they can't survive the stomach's environment. But this new device could overcome that problem, which ultimately allows virtually any medication to be swallowed. This is according to scientists who are all putting this together. So these smart pills attach themselves inside the stomach and then inject a payload through the gastric wall. Doesn't it? I did say sounds a bit too 3019-ish. So it involves some clever engineering to ensure that as well the medicine and the dose of medicine is released at particular times. And this is when a tiny spring-loaded needle is released once the sugar glass that surrounds it is dissolved by acid in the stomach. They say you won't be able to feel it. This is Robert Langer at MIT, who's part of the team who's made this happen. And they say that they were inspired by a tortoiseshell, because actually a tortoiseshell has those compound that just fixes itself.
Oh, yeah.
And so they thought, okay, how can we put that in a human body context? So Robert Langer also continues to say that this is the first time we've managed to deliver, for example, insulin orally as safely and effectively as you can by injection. I don't see any reason why this couldn't work to replace virtually any injectable drug. So yeah, the team at MIT are quite proud of themselves, because they say this could be life-changing for like more than 415 million people alone who just suffer from diabetes worldwide and who have to inject insulin at least once a day to manage their condition. So this is quite a game changer, but it still is in its proof of concept stage and they're still testing it out. But look at that, smart pills. Quite 3019-ish. Some good news, though, from the medical world.
I'll take it, but I don't like the idea of these pills breaking up with needles in my stomach.
I like the prospect, though, of what this means. You open up the door to a whole slew of medical advancements that could, you know, what if one day operations might not have to be a thing? You know, if you have some sort of cancer and you don't have to go through rigorous chemotherapy and you pop a pill in, who knows?
Well, let's see.
Yeah, be optimistic about it.
Look, any advancements in medical science that can benefit us, that can treat diseases that we currently don't have treatments for, yes, of course I'm in favor. Who wouldn't be, right?
Yeah, let's see how it goes.
All right, very good. It's almost the weekend again. It happens very quickly.
Leanne is very disappointed at this point. Yeah.
Leanne was so funny last night. Just tell everybody what she was saying in the group. No, tell everybody. They need to know this.
I actually read this all this morning because I was asleep by the time you guys were texting. This is so bizarre. It started off with Gord actually complaining about Damon Calvari.
Oh, God.
And I actually brought this up with you the other day.
Yeah, we got to talk about this. This guy is spamming everybody. And by the way, if you're getting WhatsApps from Damon, his personal number telling you to download his podcast, it's just so sad. It's just so pathetic. Please block him by all means. You don't have to feel any responsibility. He is farming out his podcast to anyone, including Gord, who will listen. And it's just embarrassing.
And he's just sending link after link after link.
It's enough already. I'm actually going to get him on the show and we're going to talk to him about this. Because
and confront him on that?
It's spam. And you are not allowed to do that to people. This is the reason WhatsApp won't allow broadcast messages to more than X number of people. Because of people like him who abuse it. Now imagine if I was sending you a notification every day on WhatsApp, no less. To have to do this. You'd be furious with me, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Anyway. So.
Well, as I am, because I also get these links all the time. True to form, though, Ben was the one who came in with his own recommendation as to how Gord can deal with the situation. And Ben says, you know what? Just send him a dick pic. That will just solve the situation. I don't know if that exactly works.
So then Leanne comes up out of nowhere. And what does she say?
Sorry, I'm drunk, but did someone say dick pic? My number is... And she puts it there. And that's all she wants. That was the keyword that triggered her. Just send her dick pics and that's
like,
all
I'll
she
have
needs.
One of those. That's good. I'll take one. And then she's like, I got load shedding, but I can still... I'm happy to receive dick pics.
Just in case, my number is still... Just another day in this group
life. I just want to apologize to anyone who's been spammed by Damon for his podcast. It's just embarrassing. And no one should be abusing you like that. Just block him and we'll talk to him and try to get him to behave. I bet you it's Bernice behind this.
Let me see. Yeah, I got two yesterday.
Oh, Jesus.
I got.
Why don't you just block him? I mean, I've blocked him a long time ago.
Well, what if I still need to organize him for the show?
No, you can phone him then. But you don't need to get his WhatsApps. It's ridiculous. Utterly ridiculous and abusive, actually.
I'll do so.
Yeah, there we go. Some useful advice for this morning. Coming up, Canton Pillay, the burning platform. We'll also check in with Anthea Gardner, who's going to give us a nice summary of what's going on with the budget speech that Tito Mboweni delivered last night. And if you saw that speech and you'd like to chime in, you know what to do. 0861-555-189.
This is CliffCentral.com.